Let's call to order the House Committee on Land Use for Thursday, May 14th, 2009. And open a public hearing on House Senate Bill 566. Ms. Ross?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this measure specifies that a Metropolitan Service District does not have to consider the capability classification system or the cubic foot site class of land it designates as urban reserve within an urban growth boundary, effective December 1st, 2009.
Okay, thanks. We have a special guest with us, Senator Starr.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to testify this afternoon. For the record, I'm Bruce Starr. I am the senator for Western Washington County, and I bring you Senate Bill 566. It is really a technical fix to a bill that we passed the last legislative session, Senate Bill 1011. As you will recall, perhaps, Senate Bill 1011 allowed Metro and the three counties in the Portland region to jointly determine where the region will and will not grow over the next 40 to 50 years. That bill came about of basically a process of broad consensus that brought wide-ranging interests together, including 1,000 Friends of Oregon, home builders in cities and counties in Metro. This bill fixes a little problem that we missed when we passed Senate Bill 1011. It's possible to interpret the so-called hierarchy of lands in such a way that was to force the region right back into the debate over soil quality that Senate Bill 1011 was intended to solve. The bill clarifies that urban reserves have been designated under the new process established in Senate Bill 1011. When the region moves to bring these reserves into the urban growth boundary, we won't have to be required to argue about which urban reserves to bring into the boundary based on soil types if we pass this bill. Yeah. From the perspective of land use laws, this bill says that all urban reserves are created equal, and the region can consider what areas to urbanize based on the suitability of land for urban development. That's what we thought we were doing when we passed Senate Bill 1011. That's what this bill does. I would ask for your support on this, really a technical fix on a bill that we moved last session. There are broader land use issues up in the metro region, and there's consensus to continue to work together, both local governments with Metro, to resolve those issues. So you will see that this the Angros version of this bill is pretty significantly different than the bill that I originally introduced. The bill as I originally introduced raises issues that are complex, complicated, and controversial. And those are the issues that
we
continue.
Expect no less of you, Senator.
Those are the issues we'll continue to talk about. This bill, as it is before you, is a consensus bill that virtually everyone is supportive of, and it does accomplish an important public policy purpose that we need to get done in this session. With that, Madam Chair, I take any questions. There's a couple of folks here that can talk technical terms if all the hard questions could be asked perhaps of them. But I'd be happy to try it at least. So thank you for the
opportunity. Thank you, Senator. Questions for the good senator? Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. A few other folks to testify: Randy Tucker, Jack Isselman, Bob Rindy.
Whatever.
Why don't you hang back, because we'll bring another panel up. We'll bring you up with Mr. Cleave. Mr. Tucker.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Randy Tucker, Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro. I've distributed a couple of pieces of paper. I just want to tell you what they are. One is a letter from the so-called Core 4. Senator Starr, who did a great job of explaining this bill, actually, and the need for it. What was I going to say? He described Senate Bill 1011 to you. Senate Bill 1011 now has led to a significant process in the Portland region that is taking up a lot of people's time and energy, and is going to result, we hope, at the end of this year in an outcome with the designation of urban and rural reserves. The way Senate Bill 1011 works is that decision at the end of this year will be made by agreement between Metro and the three counties of the region, and there is a designated lead person from each of those jurisdictions that's participating in that process. The letter you have from Chair Tom Bryan, Commissioner Jeff Cohn, Kogan, Commissioner Charlotte Lehan, and Metro Councilor Catherine Harrington, is a letter from those four people who are in the driver's seat on that process. You also have some testimony from me, which goes through sort of the technical reasons for this bill. I don't necessarily need to march you through that unless you'd like me to. The one thing that I want to point to you is that on the back of that sheet, I have reproduced the statute that causes the problem that we're trying to address, and that's the farmland hierarchy statute. I have underlined, it doesn't cause a problem, it's just we need to address it. I have underlined two pieces of it, subsection 1A, which is the first priority for bringing land to an urban growth boundary, that's urban reserve, and subsection 2, which is the language that we're trying to clarify with this statute. And we're trying to clarify that subsection 2, which says that worse farmland comes into the urban growth boundary before better farmland, applies to farmland but doesn't apply to urban reserves once they've been designated under the process established in Senate Bill 1011. That process involves an extensive analysis of the capability of farmland, and it also involves simultaneous designation of urban and rural reserves. The rural reserves are intended to protect farmland for the long run, farmland, forest land, and important natural features for a 40 to 50 year period. And because we're doing that, the assumption of all the participants in the process of developing Senate Bill 1011 last session was that after we've designated the urban reserves, we wouldn't have to then go through the farmland discussion again when those urban reserves are brought into the urban growth boundary. And so the language of Senate Bill 566 says that you don't have to do that. I'm not sure if that was clear or not, but that's what we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to make sure that at the end of this very elaborate process that we've undertaken in the region to come to a broad-based agreement around the future direction of growth in the Portland region and around what lands should not be subject to growth, that we don't have to have the same battle again when we actually expand the urban growth boundary. So I'd be happy to answer any questions if that makes things more complicated than they otherwise were.
Let's hear from Mr. Esselman.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, Jack Esselman here today on behalf of the City of Hillsborough. I'll be succinct. The City of Hillsborough supports 566, the engrossed version of the bill. The bill had an interesting start out of the gates over in the Senate. Randy and I, as we were approaching the hearing, realized we were amending the same bill unbeknownst to one another. The amendments that we were bringing on behalf of the City of Hillsborough are not in this bill, and that's the result of a compromise between our respective clients. The amendments we were seeking relate to sub-regional analysis of urban land needs during the periodic review of an urban growth boundary. That's something that the City of Hillsborough and our neighbors to the west, Forest Grove and Cornelius, are committed to exploring. However, given the timing of when this bill was coming forward in the Senate and the importance of the 1011 process and the need to get that right and not add further complexity to it, in the interest of cooperation and I think good public policy, we dropped our amendments to this bill on the Senate side with the agreement from Metro that we would continue to dialogue in the interim. So we may be back before you yet again in 2011, but that's how we got here today.
1,000 years after 1011. And Madam Chair, could I just follow up? I was remiss in not also putting on the record Metro's commitment to participate in that dialogue with our regional partners around this question of sub-regional analysis. We agreed to that over on the Senate side. I said it on the record on the Senate side. I'd like to say it here.
Good. Thanks. Questions for either of these folks? Representative Wingert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Randy, I got a couple of questions about the urban rural reserve process. When do you expect this process of designating these two types of reserves to be completed?
End of this year, Madam Chair, Representative Wingert, end of this year, and in fact, I believe we put an effective date into the bill of December 1st, 2009, because we may, it's possible that the Metro Council may actually try to designate urban a UGB expansion at the end of this year. That's not yet determined. The analysis is still going on. We have a deadline at the end of this year to adopt an urban growth report, which is an analysis of the capacity of the urban growth boundary. Sometimes when Metro expands the urban growth boundary, they adopt the urban growth report and expand the boundary at the same time. We wanted to make sure that this bill was in effect prior to the end of this year, which is why we chose the date of December 1st, so that in the event that we chose to expand the urban growth boundary from the urban reserves that are being designated through this process, we'd have that option without this legal glitch causing a complication. So that's a longer answer than you asked for, but yes, end of this year is the target.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Thank you. So the idea is that we will have identified 50 years worth of potential urban growth expansion for the urban reserve area, and will we also have designated in our rural reserves areas that cannot be considered for 50 years, or exactly how will that 50-year designation affect the rural reserves?
You have it almost right, Representative. The law, Senate Bill 1011, says that if we choose to undergo the process that it authorizes, which we obviously have chosen to undergo, that we must designate urban reserves through that process that would provide for between 40 and 50 years worth of urban development capacity, urban growth capacity. Or actually, the bill, I believe, says 20 to 30 years beyond the current 20-year supply. So 40 to 50 years. And we will, at the end of the day, determine how much land we're bringing in by the number of years of supply that we are going to provide capacity for, based on projections and the best available evidence that we have now. And so, for instance, if we choose to bring in to urban reserves 43 years worth of land for urban development, then the rural reserves will be off limits to development for 43 years. So, whatever length of time we designate urban reserves to provide capacity for, that's, if that sentence works, then that's the length of time for which rural reserves designated through this process will be not able to be brought into the urban growth boundary. There's no further regulation applied to the rural reserves. They just can't come into an urban growth boundary.
Follow-up?
Yes, Representative.
So assume the scenario of 43 years. When we're done with this process at the end of the year, we will not start this process again for 43 years, or maybe at least for 40 or something, in anticipation of coming up against that 43, we would maybe a few years before that. We won't start this process again for a decade.
Madam Chair, Representative Wingard, I don't think anybody's eager to start it again, but the legislation does not prohibit us from starting it again. The only requirement is that any time we do it, that at the end of the day, we have 40 to 50 years worth of urban growth boundary capacity in the urban reserves, in the existing area and the urban reserves together, when we designate. So we could theoretically go out again and put ourselves through this kind of pain 5 years down the road. We've been required by law to undergo an analysis of the UGB in the metro area only every 5 years. That's one of the things that we're trying to not have to deal with in quite the same way. We've been doing the entire analysis of the boundary every 5 years. What we're doing now is doing a huge analysis that we hope will make those 5-year analyses a lot easier. We don't want to have to go through this thing again. Now, there's a bill that the House just passed that's over in the Senate that would actually prohibit the region from going through that process again until half of the urban reserves that are being designated through the current process have been brought into the urban growth boundary. And so if that goes through, then we actually won't be able to go through it again, and for quite a period of time. Most of the people that are going through it now are hoping that they're retired by the next time we have to go through it. But there's nothing that right, but there's nothing that prohibits us from going through it sooner currently.
Follow-up?
Yes, Representative.
Thank you for your patience. So assuming that this bill that we passed on the House side does go through, I'm trying to establish on the record here that the process that is going on right now and that four people are providing the lead on and have a great deal of influence on are going to make decisions on land use that the people of the Portland metropolitan area are going to have to live with for multiple decades.
Madam Chair, Representative Winger, that is correct. The urban reserves, if you look at the statute that I provided that is not being amended by this bill, urban reserves are the first priority for bringing into the urban growth boundary. That doesn't mean that only urban reserves designated this year will be brought into the urban growth boundary for the next, 20, 30, 40 years. It does mean that they are the first priority. It's conceivable that we could learn information in the future that causes land that is not designated as an urban reserve to be more suitable than land that is designated or as an urban reserve in some urban growth boundary decision in the future. I don't anticipate that anytime soon because I think there will be quite a supply, obviously, 40 to 50 years worth of land in the urban reserves. So everything isn't completely locked in right now. Now, the rural reserves, however, barring a change in the statute, would be off limits to being brought into urban growth boundaries for 40 to 50 years into the future, whatever the timeline of the urban reserves is. And that we've all gone into that with our eyes open.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You bet. Anybody else? Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Bob Rindy, Sean Cleave, Jeff Stone, please. Mr. Rindy, how are you?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And I did submit a letter. Director Whitman asked me to make sure that I was here not only to support this bill, and we do, and I've gone into a little detail here that's pretty much the same as what Randy just told you, so I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to refer you to the last paragraph or next last paragraph of my letter. There's some debate in the broader statewide about this little piece of statute that's amended by this bill. That's ORS 197-298 sub 2. That statute was written about 1993, taken almost word for word from LCDC's urban reserve rule. And I say almost because the way it was written, there's some ambiguity and there's some argument about whether sub 2 applies when urban reserve land is put in an urban growth boundary. A lot of folks for many, many years presumed it doesn't even apply in that situation. But now that it's come up and there's argument about that, I think it's important that I think that's one of the reasons Metro has submitted this bill, make sure that little glitch doesn't catch them up in their process. What Mr. Whitman is concerned about is we don't want the negative implication to be brought, should this get before the courts in the future, that because we said it doesn't apply in statute, therefore that must mean it does everywhere else. And it's my understanding, talking to the sponsors of this, and I've been assured by Mr. Tucker, the intent of this bill, and we would hope that the record would be clear, is not to in some way influence that broader debate statewide, and that by passage of this, there's some negative implication that this somehow upsets that whole apple cart. So I've asked, I put in this letter, a paragraph that Mr. Whitman asked me to write, and we hope that's on the record, that's not the intent of this bill. And I know that's a kind of a cryptic, short, quick explanation, but I'll be happy to answer questions further if you want some more detail on that. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Cleave.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau, testifying today in a neutral manner regarding 566. I did want to put on the record regarding the process going on in Metro that came from Senate Bill 1011. The Oregon Farm Bureau would just request that the legislature continuously provide oversight and continue to display some interest, as this committee has, regarding the process. We have quite a few frustrated members, specifically in the Washington County area. Of course, that's where the epicenter of many of our land use debates occur. But 50 years is a considerable amount of time. The areas that are being discussed from different vantage points do appear to be arbitrary, and from a very, you know, high vantage point to date, some of the work that has been done is somewhat academic in nature rather than policy oriented. I serve as alternate to Mr. Stone as one of the only agricultural representative of the steering committee. There is one representative from the Department of Ag, but that is not an advocacy position. So our request today is within the context of this bill, which we have agreed neutrality on from the Farm Bureau's point of view, just that the legislature continue to evaluate the work that's being done by the Core Four. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Mr. Stone.
Madam Chair, Jeff Stone, Oregon Association of Nurseries. To get in part of my testimony with what Representative Wingard was kind of the crux of his question is it's about certainty. It's about certainty of where we and can we grow, and certainty about providing protection for foundational lands of agricultural areas that are very important to the economic parts of this state. The nursery and greenhouse industry, as you well aware, is both urban and rural. And so oftentimes in the urban growth boundary debate, and being a former chief of staff of Metro, that's one of my areas in my closet that I'm not, you know, well, now it's out on the public record, so it's no longer in there. Yeah, well, we all have skeletons. I was responsible in being an architect to how to expand the boundary when I worked for Metro. And some of it is about surrounding farmland, and then fait accompli, you have to bring it in. What I'm saying is that the evolutionary debate over Senate Bill 1011 was about trying to do things differently. And so to look at the economic engine of agriculture, but also creating certainty for the home builders and others about where we're going to grow. So in the context of the bill that's before you today, how it's changed from its onset is important, because they were looking at doing subregional need in pockets and seeing if it adds up to a total, rather than having a total and see where you need to grow in the pockets. Does that make sense? So you have an urban growth report that's going to come out this December. That will happen. I think Metro will do it. I do not think that they may make a decision on whether or not to expand their urban growth boundary. That urban growth report can be written that there is no need to expand the urban growth boundary. But I would also submit that I think that it's, I'd be surprised as your agricultural representative on the steering committee that a decision will be made by December. I think it would be smarter of that coalition and of the three county chairmen and the metro councilor to have it coincide with an urban growth boundary debate to see where urban reserves are appropriate and where rural reserves are appropriate. So those are just the context of the bill that's before you today. You know, we appreciate the fact that the city of Hillsborough and Metro came together to try to work out amendments. That's not inconsequential. So the nursery and greenhouse industry has lots of skin in this game, and so we have an outright interest in making sure that it gets done. So J. Frank Schmidt in Gresham, Alpha Nursery in Salem, you name all the different nurseries that are near interchanges that would be prime areas for expanding any growth boundary anywhere in the state, aren't gobbled up just because of convenience. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Jeff and Sean, you've been a part of this process. I have seen some of these maps, preliminary maps that have come out, and I guess the concern that has developed in my mind from looking at them is that a lot of what I'm seeing on these maps just seems to be reflective of the personalities involved, and I can't look at the maps in my own mind and figure out what principles are guiding the decisions that are being put on those maps. And so the reason I asked my previous questions is I am concerned that a process is underway that will lock us in for many decades that may be the vision of a handful of people and their particular preferences, because they're in the positions to do that. And to have an entire metro area locked in for 40 or 50 years based on the decisions of people who may not even be alive anymore, when we're still having to live with those decisions, is troubling me. And I'm you guys are a little bit closer on that panel, so I guess I'm looking for some assurance that there's some set of principles that are being used to guide the creation of these maps, because I'm just not seeing it right now.
I'll take it. Your fears are justified, Madam Chair, Representative Wingard, in the sense that it's reflective. Maps that have been developed thus far are reflective of the personalities who developed the map. Agriculture, for example, has not developed their own overlay map about where foundational lands are and where we wouldn't want areas to be touched. However, I'm not closing the door on the opportunity of the steering committee to work together and try to take in all of those considerations and develop something that is realistic. So while in part I'm confirming the worst of your fears, in the other part I want to assure you that agriculture is not simply one farmer now crying in open session hoping not to be paved, but we have industries more actively involved in the metro process, which I can tell you they're not used to. And I think that the development community is not used to agriculture being organized and having a significant voice. But to the main point is whether or not you lock yourself in is a good question, and it is an option for Metro to engage this process. Because remember, what we want to try to do is not have it be an eventuality of nursery and farmland to be just gobbled up over time. And so trying to at least recognize the economic and viability of agriculture within the urban setting is important. So I think it's worth the debate to have. And that's why I would echo Mr. Cleve's point of view that having the legislature being actively involved is important.
May I ask Mr. Rindy then, does this bill change any of that?
Madam Chair, if I could. No, I believe this bill reflects an interpretation that pretty much all of us thought was correct when 1011 was passed. But with respect to the question, and I think I do have to disagree a little bit with what was just said, whereas you might see something that reflects, quote, personalities right now, Metro is, this is a process where a lot of land is selected for evaluation. There's ultimately a decision that has to be made. And when that's done, the urban reserve that's selected and the rural reserves are submitted to LCDC. Now, as soon as 1011 was passed, and I know because I manage this project, for about 8 months, we wrote with a broad coalition of partners in the metro area, we wrote a rule full of criteria that, to the best we could get them, are more objective than subjective. And those criteria will apply. When Metro selects the lands that are for urbanization and when they select land that is best for farm and forest use and put it in rural reserve, they have to follow those criteria. And if they don't, the way the process will work is ultimately that will land on LCDC's desk. They will make a decision. Hopefully, they will send it back if those criteria haven't been met. And If not, of course, the courts are in play as well, and there's criteria both in statute and the rules. So I don't think this is going to end up being simply a decision where land is selected based on personalities. Those criteria we went around and around on those for a long time, and there were lots of input and lots of discussion, and I think we've ended up with criteria that indeed will result in land that is best for urbanization being top priority, and the best farm and forest land will hopefully, we think, end up as rural reserves for 50 years or whatever the period is. Well, I'm confident that will happen.
Until any deliberative process figures out a way to leave the human beings out of it, whether it's a metro process, a local city process, or a legislative process, personalities will influence decisions.
Mm-hmm. And, Madam Chair, I'd just like to follow up. I think both Mr. Stone and Mr. Rendy are correct in their assessment. I do think the rules provide some ironclad principles that will guide things. There is the personalities, the lower you get to the ground in government, kind of show through, and that's where the mapping is coming through. But the Core 4 will have to interpret those rules with a higher standard, and we do have quite a bit of confidence in that Core 4 group. Also built into the rules is a unanimous decision from the four of them. So any one of them, the members of that Core 4, could carry some veto power over the decision. So just wanted to add that to the record. Thank you.
Any other questions? It is pretty sobering, though, Representative, to think about decisions that get made and last for 20 or 30 or 50 years. We do that with some regularity here.
I recognize.
We build a bridge, it's probably going to be there for at least 50 years. We put a road somewhere, it's going to direct where traffic goes for 50 years or more.
And I recognize that this discussion is not specific to the objective of the bill, but since the topic came before us, and I do represent entirely an area within the three-county metropolitan area, I thought it was at least worth fleshing some of these issues out.
Okay. Representative Glenn.
Actually, I wish I knew the answer to this. I wish I'd known it last session before I voted on it. Is there any reason the legislature can't come back and revisit it if we don't like it and change the statute? People creep too far below the Willamette River, for example, into my county, or if too much farmland is going to get gobbled up.
Madam Chair, Representative Clem, I may have kind of a snapshot of that answer. Piece of legislation had been requested to be drafted that would provide, for lack of a better word, legislative codification of what Metro is doing, and that through legislative council was found to be unconstitutional. It wasn't necessarily an amendment that Farm Bureau would have supported, but I was aware of that. So I don't think that would be necessary just from my perspective now. I think there are a variety of avenues, as Mr. Rendy had described, that will provide checks and balances through the normal course of land use decisions moving forward. But again, I'd say that from our perspective, the Core 4 is a fairly balanced group of individuals. Four people making a decision that has such a broad impact, obviously is a difficult thing to happen. So it'll be very interesting to watch this unfold.
If we're going to pursue that, we probably ought to get some legal beagles in here.
Because I understand.
Madam Chair, Representative Clem, I would also note I think it is a legal question, and I think if you follow the Constitution, you can probably change just about anything in land use. One of the things you'd have to change is the definition of a metropolitan service district before you go into your county, my county as well,
mm-hmm.
Because that in itself is a big hurdle to get over before Metro expands into another county. And so I think there's a big check and balance right there that we didn't even put in the rules, but it's huge.
Anybody else?
There were efforts made to try and get into Marion.
Thank you. Anyone else to testify on Senate Bill 566? Did you want to add something, Mr. Tucker?
Briefly.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Randy Tucker again. I just was going to respond as well. There was actually an early meeting of the Reserves Steering Committee before I stopped going to them because I started coming here. There was quite a vigorous discussion about the very question you're raising, Representative Clem, having to do with especially the question of Marion County. And, you know, Dick Benner's not here today. He can answer it best. But he set it to rest pretty much with a legal understanding that there's no way through this process that we can get there, especially not with the cast of characters that's sitting around the table that's there right now. And so Clackamas County does cross the river, I think, in Washington County. But, you know, that's still all, you know, subject of a lot of debate, but there is no way that this process can go into Marion County. And there's also been outreach to neighboring communities that are not part of Metro and not even part of the three counties, just to make sure that they were aware of the conversation that was going on. And, you know, we got some very emphatic responses from people in Marion County saying, stay away. And, of course, no one ever intended to go there, I don't think, at least not on the Metro Council. But, you know, so I just wanted to get that on the record. We can provide more technical background for you, Representative, if you'd like it, just on the Marion County question.
Okay.
Just a follow-up comment, if I may.
Yes, Representative.
I heard one of my county commissioners, I saw the quote, it was quite extraordinary, came out of his mouth too, it was surprising to me. I don't know if the beast was the word used, maybe. But
monster, I believe.
Monster. Yeah. I think maybe offline I could get the answer. I wasn't trying to claim there wasn't, this process isn't working, and I think, which is what Mr. Cleave sort of answered, the technical question I think is a legal one, which is, can the legislature come back if it chooses to, if it's not happy with the decision you make, whether it's in December or some other time, can the legislature come back in and alter that? And I'm fairly certain Mr. Rendy nailed it, which is, unless it's in the Constitution, we can't, then we could. Not that we'd want to, just that we could.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Because we think we know so much better than local government elected officials how to run their local governments.
It depends. When they do what we want them to do, they're smart.
Bingo!
Yeah.
Anybody else? Let's close the public hearing. We'll schedule this for a work session soon. Thanks. We're adjourned.